Hello. Now I'm in my booth.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Murder Mystery. And I'm Andrew.
And I'm Katie.
We got it down this time.
We actually introduced ourselves, and now we're like, where do we go from here?
I know.
Well,
this is the awkward part.
Well, welcome back. Obviously, last week we didn't have a regular episode. I hope you guys enjoyed one of our quote-unquote lost episodes, the one before our reformat.
From the archives.
The archives, yes. There was something in the episode, because I ended up listening to a lot of it because, I don't know, I was feeling nostalgic. So the one thing I noticed is we were giving each other snaps for a lot of things. And I was like, oh, I should do that because Andrew is like getting a house and that's awesome. So snaps for Andrew. Because Andrew needs snaps.
Oh, gosh. You're making me blush.
So, yep, Andrew here is going through some major changes and tearing up right now.
Going through some shit.
Yeah.
that's for sure.
Some major adulting happening over there.
I know. We're in the process of packing up our house, our apartment. Put a pause to that because, you know, my time with you and our listeners is also very important.
Absolutely. And because we were supposed to record this episode like a week ago, but... And we tried. We did successfully record half an episode-ish. Then there were technical difficulties. So, but everything's cool now, so we're starting over. And this week we're in...
India! God, I love India.
I love India, too. It's one of my favorite cuisines, for one.
It is. It is one of your favorite cuisines. Curry, right?
Oh, yeah. I had a whole mess of... Actually, the dish I had today was a Singaporean dish, but it was curry, and it was delicious. Oh, and so, yes, we're in India, and our cocktail that we've paired with this week's episode is called the Dirty Mango Lassi. And I did have it. I did make it. It curdled. I wasn't a fan. I'm really confused about that. But apparently you just make your traditional mango lassi. You use Greek yogurt, a little sugar and cardamom, fresh mango. I blend it all up and you blend it with a dark rum. Maybe that's where I went wrong. I blended it with the coconut rum that seems to make an appearance with every episode.
Because we have so much of it.
Because we have a surplus of coconut rum. But maybe that's where I went wrong. So
yeah, possibly.
Future.
I haven't partook.
Yeah, well, because I gave him a glowing recommendation where I was like, hey, it curdled and I threw up a little, but, you know, it was so good. It's okay.
It was delicious. I puked a little bit, but...
I do highly recommend everyone just have your traditional regular mango lassi. You don't have to put the rum in it. They're velvety and delicious. And if you do put the rum in it, God help you.
Yeah, God be with you.
And yeah, happy purging.
The Purge 2020.
Purge 2020. So yeah, other than that, we're ready to rumble. Andrew, I'm excited to re-enjoy
what you have
to tell me today.
Yes, okay. So, to start again,
but not again for the audience. So you did
not again.
Yeah, you guys don't know.
You don't know anything. This
you
is
missed
your first time
so many
hearing.
Good jokes.
I know. Hopefully, we can recreate.
Yeah, very organically.
All right. So to start, I am going to disclaimer and say that we are just barely scratching the surface of what Hindu mythology is. The cosmology alone would probably take hours to word vomit all of the information and theorize. To give you an idea, imagine Greek mythology and how complex that is in its entirety. Foreshadowing. And apply that to just the cosmology.
So that barely skims the surface.
Yeah, yeah. It's the skim part of milk.
It's that rubbery piece that forms on the top of pudding.
It's the foam that forms when you're making espresso.
That's better.
Coffee. So you can probably guess that we will be talking about some cosmology this week and maybe even a couple deities if we feel spicy enough.
Like a spicy curry.
Yes, if we feel curry enough.
Curry on.
So to kick this off with the Hindu universe, the universe and its states of matter cycles. This takes place over a great period of time and occurs within the physical universe and affects all living beings. Think of it like a multiverse, but instead of several universes and realities layered over one another, it's linear. So this universe that we are currently in will last around 4.32 billion years in a period called Kalpa, or also the Day of Brahma. This period is when the universe is first created and then completely destroyed at the end.
So we're like right on the cusp of the switchover.
It feels like that. Yeah.
Hashtag 2020.
The Purge 2020 remix. Then it is recreated in the next Kalpa. Once one Kalpa ends, an equal period of partial dissolution, or Pralaya, I'm hoping I'm saying these right, or Night of Brahma, which is when Brahma takes rest from the creative duties he has. This also sounds like a really long work week, so during Brahma's extended weekend, the universe stays in this unmanifested state. And then you just rinse and repeat. So you have 4.32 billion years of a physical universe, and then you have 4.32 billion years of nothing at all.
It's like working in the oil fields, like 2 weeks on, 1 week off. It's like 4.32 billion years on, 4.32 billion years off.
It was a long week already. I can't imagine what 4.32 billion years of this week would be.
Oh my God, no wonder he's like, and I'm done. 2020, I'm calling it.
This is the year that it ends.
Just going to etch a sketch the world right on out of here.
Shake it. We're going to shake it off like Taylor Swift.
She's in on it. She's
She knew. It was communicated to her in advance. Then you have matter within the universe, which is based on just three inert gunas or qualities. Sattva, which is goodness. Rajas, which is passion. And tamas, which is darkness. Further into these three gunas are the states of the gunas that make up all matter within the universe. are you lost yet? Are you confused?
I'm listening.
You're listening.
I'm following.
You're following? Okay. Pradhana, or root matter. Okay, so now we're back to the states of the gunas. So we have pradhana, or root matter. This is gunas in an unmixed and unmanifested state.
Okay, so he's needs to be shaken to be activated?
Yeah, shaken, probably like a vinaigrette.
Like all of the layers.
With all of the layers. Like this is the layers of the vinaigrette just kind of chilling itself. And then we have prakriti, or primal matter. Gunas in a mixed and unmanifested state. So it's like the thought of what vinaigrette could be if it's mixed together.
Just the idea of vinaigrette, not actual vinaigrette.
Yeah, so you're like looking at it and imagining that it's mixed, but it's not actually mixed.
And now I'm just thinking about like Olive Garden salad.
Oh, I love their salad.
I do too.
Oh my God. Breadsticks. Wow. Hi. You okay there?
Yeah, I'm real turned on by breadsticks apparently.
All right. And then the third one we have universe, or just matter. So this is gunas that's in a mixed and manifested state. So now we have the fully mixed and full-on mixed vinaigrette ready to pour.
Oh, I'm just hungry again.
This gets broken down even further into manifested subtle elements. Ahamkara, which is ego, buddhi, intelligence, and citta, or the mind, and manifested physical elements.
I got that booty. I'm intelligent.
I mean, you're all three, honey. You got the ego, which is a good thing. You have a good ego. You have intelligence, and you have a beautiful mind.
Aw, like Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Except not schizophrenic.
Yeah, not schizophrenic.
So, okay, we've got the vinaigrette. It's mixed. It's ready to toss your salad. It's ready to toss the universe's salad.
And show it a good time. Maybe take it to dessert somewhere, like ice cream.
Well, at least it's chivalrous.
It's a nice lady, okay? Okay, so next we have time. We already got a sense of how the time works within this universe system and the three types of matter that make up everything. So it's time, or kala, that drives all matter within the overall events from a single moment to the entire lifespan of the universe itself. For instance, the Prakriti maintains a mixed state for the life of Brahma, which is about 311.04 trillion years.
Holy crap.
Right? And then followed by the great dissolution of this same amount of time.
Even longer work week.
Yeah, so I'm going to guess, because it's the life of Brahma, that maybe the 311.04 trillion years is actually the lifespan of Brahma. But then, like, the 4.32 billion years is more like a day. Like, I don't think they're measured the same.
Measuring the...
All right, so then the universe matter, which we already know has a similar cycle lasting 4.32 billion years in each phase, it then also breaks down into even more subcategories of time and how each subcategory is measured. But I am sure your head is already spinning from all the information that's been given, right?
Yeah. Well, my... Okay, so my question is, so we're in that, like, first 4.32 billion years, right? And we're, like, right at... In theory, we're right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or so what happens when we hit that switch over? Does everything just disappear? Everything stop? Are we frozen?
I would like to think that... It's not that we are, like, are frozen. It's just right now we're in a physical manifested state. And then when that switch happens to the night of Brahma, then nothing exists. Then everything just kind of breaks apart. Like, will we feel it?
It just isn't anymore.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, it just stops to be. Like, you will cease to exist in, like, an instant.
Will it hurt?
You know, I'm not going to make any promises.
Like, I do not have a direct line to Brahma, but...
yeah, I mean, if I did, I would be asking Brahma these questions. Hey, when you end us, is it going to hurt?
He's all, hell yeah, it is, baby.
yes, daddy.
Gross.
I know.
We're not okay with daddy talk. Do you? I'm not going to yuck your yum, but...
No, yeah. I'm not going to yuck your yum.
But just, I'm not going to yum that.
I am not going to yam your ham.
Gross. You.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, you wanna talk about a deity?
I do.
Okay. So... The deity we will cover today is the well-known Shiva. In short, Shiva is the god of destruction, destroyer of evil, lord of meditation. You know, the one that is usually going to be around when you are doing yoga or recentering. I mean, I did some recentering last night in the shower. Like, I just kind of, like, let the hot water run down my back and I just sang my heart out.
Aww.
And I was taking a long time and, like, the boys were waiting for me to get out of the shower. And I, like, opened the door. I was like, hey, I'm not, like, intentionally taking a long time, but my body kind of needs this, so I love you.
You're like, I'm going to be singing the entire album of Rent, the Broadway version, not the movie, so this is going to be a little while.
I just kept singing She Used to Be Mine from The Waitress.
Aww. I have to work on that one. So Shiva.
Yes. Within Shiva alone, there are many traditions and branches of how Shiva is seen or worshipped or even just mentioned. this is where we pick our battles. So we're just going to get into the yoga part. In this version of Shiva, Shiva is the great yogi, completely absorbed within himself, because it's mentioned that Shiva is a him in this state. Yep.
Interesting.
There are traditions and branches of Shiva that represent Shiva as a female, but in this particular one for yoga, Shiva is a he.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Shiva is the one who taught yoga to sages back in the day and how the art of yoga was able to be passed down through the ages. He is considered to be a supreme guru who, to quote, teaches in silence the oneness of one's innermost self with the ultimate reality.
Wow.
That's pretty deep.
I have to say, being taught yoga by someone who comes from the Hindu faith is an incredible experience. I mean, I wasn't taught like firsthand, but I had this video growing up, go figure, with who my mom is. it was a kid's yoga video taught by this guy named Sri Swami Satchidananda, and I still remember that to this day. And he was just so peaceful and kind-hearted, and it was just, I loved it. So maybe he learned from Shiva. Not directly, but, you know.
Like, maybe the direct teachings of Shiva that was passed down through the sages and great yogis throughout the throughout the centuries.
I wonder if he's still alive. No, he's not.
Aww.
He was born in 1914.
Goodness. Now, several other traditions don't speak so highly of Shiva, but they are considered a higher god or goddess, and have many different forms depending on the tradition and text that speaks of Shiva. But from what I was able to gather in general is that Shiva is one that will force you to look within yourself and to induce change so that you can hold yourself accountable for the actions you take.
Ooh.
There's some things happening that people need to take some accountability for.
Hell I'm just saying. Like, we all should. And like, I don't know. I feel like I haven't yet connected with a deity, you know, and I'm just trying to learn so I can find my deity.
I am excited for when we get to talk about the deity that I have connected with.
Really? Not Poseidon?
Yes, Poseidon.
We already talked about that.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did. In the home episode.
Did we? Okay, well, there's more Greek.
Yeah, you didn't go into depth about Poseidon. You just talked about how it was your favorite deity and that.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes. You're giving us the spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! Poseidon's coming.
He's coming hard.
He's gonna come in waves. Shit.
This is like our most inappropriate episode so far. We're tossing salads. We're coming in waves.
We're going deep.
Breadsticks. I'm gonna do that next time I'm at Olive Garden. They hand me the breadstick. I'm like, oh yeah.
We're gonna go to Olive Garden when we get down here, and when we get the breadsticks, we're just gonna both go, yes.
Yes. Now bring me that vinaigrette.
Like when Harry met Sally.
Sorry, I got an email. So last night I joined the hosts of Death is Hilarious, another podcast, and we were on Cast. Have you ever done that before? Mm-mm. It's where you all like watch a Netflix movie together. And we watched Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it was amazing, and I had so much fun. We were cracking jokes and stuff, and they emailed me, and they said, want to do it again tonight with Repo the Genetic Opera. I was like, yeah!
Oh, I love that movie.
Tonight at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we're watching what can only be described as Blade Runner meets the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
The side drink goes in a little glass vial. A little glass vial? A little glass vial. And a little...
So there's that. So anyways, now that I've completely like hijacked your story, let's go back.
That was it.
Oh, that was it? Oh, good. Oh, good. I was really hoping I wasn't, like, interrupting mid-story, and you're like, oh, my God, shut up. But
I would have continued, honey.
You're like, I would have told you to shut up, really. Like,
I would have been like, okay, moving on.
currying on.
We're going to curry on here. Let's go.
So, cool.
Cool.
All right, back on track here. So first off, I wanted to start with this village called Kodini in the Malappuram district of Kerala, India, that has an extremely high rate of twin births. And it's 6 times the global average, which is insane because, like, twins are actually not very likely. And so to have multiple twins, it's just amazing. So the village currently claims to have 220 pairs of twins to only 2,000 families. However, experts estimate that this number is closer to 350. So that's it. And that's just who lives there currently.
That's a lot. Like, are those twins also having twins?
I actually don't know. Like a Russian doll effect. I don't really know. And it doesn't really matter. It's not just like identical. There's like fraternal twins. There doesn't seem to be a specific pattern because usually twins are born to older women, like that you have a higher rate of twin pregnancies in like 40-year-old women, but they're getting married at quite a young age, but they're still being born to really young women. So one of the scientists that has spent time researching the area, Dr. Sribiju, stated that without access to detailed biochemical analysis equipment, I cannot say for certain what the reason for the twinning is, but I feel like it has something to do with what the villagers eat and drink, which is, I feel like, you know, a safe assumption. But, you know, he obviously is not going to be able to tell that until he's able to do the research. So, and this phenomenon's only been happening for the past like 60 to 70 years. So these 350 sets of twins are all pretty young still. Some of them might be old. I just think that's amazing though, because they don't really have a lot of access to the medical care that we have. And twin pregnancies are high risk pregnancies.
Yeah.
And so to be able to successfully birth that many twins, good on them.
And with the limited medical access, and not to mention, like, twins nowadays are more common with IVF treatments.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's why this doctor, he's trying to get this research funded, because he thinks that if we're able to look into it more, it might lead to development in the field of, like, assisting people who struggle with infertility, which maybe makes sense. So it's like, let's figure this shit out. Who's not funding this? Let's get on this.
Right? Like, I have a friend from work that, you know, they've been, you know, I'm obviously not going to be saying names, but I have a friend from work who was going through those treatments, and like right as the pandemic hit.
Oh, man. So she got pregnant?
Yeah, twins.
Oh, my gosh. So see?
Yeah, she's I think a month or two away from going out on leave.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, her being home and working from home has just probably been the easiest thing on her pregnancy.
Yeah.
Because
that's the dream.
Yeah.
Right? I would have killed for that. I annoyed the hell out of my boss in my last pregnancy because I had to get up and go to the bathroom every like 15 minutes. They're like, you're never at your desk. I'm like, no shit.
It's because I'm peeing.
Yeah. Like that, and like I threw up all the time too. I'd be like green. They're like, could you not throw up? Just stop it. So yeah, so that they even have a sign outside of this little town that says Twin Town, and I thought that was really cute.
Aww.
So they're pretty proud of this, but I think we should definitely be looking into it more. Another inexplicable, interesting phenomenon in India, and I actually didn't know this was in India. I heard about it before, but this has been happening every year for the past 100 years. From September through November, several birds die by mass suicide. Do you remember reading about this somewhere?
Birds?
Like, a shitload of birds will just, like, commit suicide. Not commit, die by suicide. Do you say die by suicide when it's a bird? I don't know.
Die by suicide? Isn't that just when they just kind of, like, stop flying and drop to the ground?
No, they intentionally plummet to the ground. Yeah. So they're, like, literally dying by suicide.
My innocence of the world is getting tainted.
I know. So they only do this here from 7 to 10 p.m., which is also really weird. But they descend from the sky into buildings and trees and into the ground. And there's no scientific explanation as to why they do this. And there's no explanation as to why they're flying at night. Because birds, everybody knows birds are daytime creatures. They're, I think, diurnal is the word instead of nocturnal. Yeah, so villagers believe that evil spirits hover in the sky at this time, causing these birds to just be like, oh, I'm done with life.
Dementors.
Dementors.
It's the Dementors, because they suck the joy out of the birds, and the birds go, I have no will, and they just plummet.
Yeah. If you guys are interested, there's footage out there. I'm conflicted.
I'm really conflicted because I kind of feel like in one part they're not just like throwing themselves down into the ground, that it's like what if they just like are croaked before they plummet, but because of how they plummet they look like they're flying.
I don't know, like I guess they like they'll do it into buildings and trees and stuff, like I don't, that's why I think I need to watch the video, because I think if people really believe that they're like flying to the ground instead of dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Then I don't know. I'd have to see it for myself. But it's weird.
It's like, I mean, I've seen things from like the news, or not necessarily the news, but like online, where there's like pictures of like rural roads that are just covered with birds. Like just for no reason.
But didn't they, I feel like at some point they had determined that they had like heart attacks midair, like here. I feel like when you're talking about like that happening here, that it was like fireworks or something scaring the shit out of them.
Like they just had like heart attacks.
Midair. But this is different. Apparently these birds like fly like with intention.
Like, come fly with me. Come fly. Fly to the ground.
Yikes. So there's that. So on a happier note, I guess, one of the world's biggest mysteries that we have all wondered about at some point in our lives is that of, like, the unicorn. Where did this come from? Where did this idea come from? Every culture has a variation of the unicorn with, like, different animals with one horn. But apparently, like, the original unicorn comes from the mythology of India. And it lives in the mountains, and it looks very similar to a donkey or antelope, but with like a single horn in the center. So
it's not so majestic anymore.
A donkey. I kind of like that, though.
That'll do, donkey.
Oh, so I kind of like the fact that it's like just a donkey with a horn instead of like a beautiful pony. And there was one, I think it was like the Chinese variation I had read about. And it was like a mix of all different animals.
Like a chimera?
Yeah, but like with a horn in the center. And apparently the horn is like short and stubby and soft. So I don't know what. Is that even a horn at that point? It's just like a pinky finger. Just a limp little pinky finger sticking out of its forehead.
Oh, I'm dying.
So yeah, that was my favorite thing.
A flaccid unicorn.
Last week I had gone over a lot of like ghost stories, but then I found something else. There was a lot of it, so I wanted to share with you that India actually has a very high volume of alien activity.
Yes.
So yeah, I didn't know that. And apparently the activity has been happening since prehistoric times. You can even see rock paintings that feature humanoid creatures. They look like they're wearing gas masks to me. If you've seen this image floating around online where someone's in like a full body sweater and like the hood, you can tie it and it looks like a cone coming out of your face. Do you know what I'm talking about? Probably
yes.
Not. But that's what that looks like.
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about because aliens.
Yes, definitely.
Yes.
Yes. So they, some
like
of the drawings.
Egypt.
Yeah. So some of the drawings include UFOs, and the UFOs usually depict a fan-like antennae. And three legs. Legs, plural. That one's easier for me.
I'm proud
of you. So, there was even an account in which Alexander the Great himself encountered aliens in India. Yeah. So, and this was in 329 BC. His army was suddenly attacked by two strange flying objects that dove at them repeatedly, much like the suicidal birds. And
no.
The UFOs scared the elephants and horses, which I was a little ticked off that Alexander the Great enslaved elephants. I guess horses too, but that seems to be more normal, I guess, normalized.
I mean, yeah.
Historical accounts describe the UFOs as great silver shields spitting fire around the rims. 329 BC, and they had way advanced technology.
They had flamethrowers, guys.
Yeah. So, and apparently between 329 BC and 1957, there were not as many accounts. But so in 1957, over 800 people reported seeing a flying saucer in the sky on the afternoon of October 4th. It was supposedly 12 feet in diameter and was a gray color. After descending 500 feet quickly toward the earth, it briefly hovered and then disappeared. But 800 people saw it. So seems legit. Now, something we didn't learn about in school, claiming American ignorance here. In 1962, China and India went to war over the unclaimed territory between their two lands. So this is called the Kong Ka Long Pass. This territory bifurcates the two countries and acts as its border. And after not being able to settle the dispute on, like, who the land belonged to, they basically agreed to each keep an eye on a section of it from afar, but nobody is allowed to go there.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is basically no man's land at this point. It's completely inaccessible to anybody who lives in on either side of the country. Just keep that in mind. It's completely, like, humanly impossible to get in there.
It's India's Area 51.
Yeah, well, it's not India's land. Like, it's nobody's territory, but the Chinese and the Indians look after it, both of them. So they each.
So is there, like, a place on the map that exists but doesn't exist?
Yeah, I'll get to that, too. Yeah. Indian civilians call it the home of the inhabited, which was really kind of creepy to me. There have been countless UFO sightings reported here from both sides of the border. So both Chinese and Indian citizens have seen UFOs here. The thing is, civilians do not believe that it is just a location common for sightings. They believe this is actually the location of a top secret underground UFO base. Within the Earth's crust.
I think my mind just imploded.
Yeah. So the theory's not, like, completely absurd. Their reasoning is because the depth of the Earth's crust at this specific point is twice that of any other region in the world. So there's this massive ridge where nobody can see into it. It's twice as deep as, like, any other ridge. So you can easily fit a bunch of UFOs in there. So in earth science, we learn that this happens when, like, one of the tectonic plates slides underneath the other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just adding that because I sucked at earth science.
The tectonic plates and the fault lines. Plates.
Yes. So in 2004, there was a geology expedition taking place in the Himachal Pradesh region. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. And the geologist spotted a little robot-like figure about 4 feet tall walking along the mountain ridge. When they tried to get closer to it, though, the robot just, like, disappeared into the pass. They couldn't see it. They couldn't get to it. A large object was seen by the Indian army floating along the Pangongso Lake, but when they checked their radar, the equipment failed to pick up a signal. Even though they could see it right there in front of them with their eyes, nothing showed up on the radar. It's creepy to me that, like, okay, say these are, for all intents and purposes, these are aliens. It's amazing to me that they had, like, they're so advanced in technology that they can control whether or not they show up on our radar, even though they're, like, visible to the human eye. It's just crazy.
Okay, so I'm going to, admittedly, I'm looking at, a satellite map right now.
Oh, dang it. Don't get there yet, because I'm going to cover it.
But I'm only, guessing on where the location is at, because you said India and China, and I was kind of working with that. But proceed.
Okay.
I need to know, because I want to know where to look.
Yes, yes. Okay, so in the reports, they refer to these as unidentified luminous objects instead of UFOs. Yeah, I liked that.
ULOs.
ULOs.
Hello.
Yellow. That's what they said to the aliens. They're like, yellow?
Yellow.
They were spherical in shape and appeared to have risen from the Chinese side of the area, chilling in place for 3 to 5 hours, and then just disappeared. So several organizations admittedly saw it, including the DRDO, the NTRO, and the Indian Army, and all were unable to identify these objects. Speculations rose again in 2006 when the area became even more mysterious because Google Earth captured aerial images of the area, and it appears to have enormous government-esque facility buildings built there, even though it's supposedly inaccessible. So now people are like, well, what the shit is going on there? Because obviously somebody knows what's going on there, and there's buildings there now. But even though both sides of the government are like, no, there's no buildings there.
They're saying there's no buildings there, but there's clearly buildings there.
Yeah.
Quit gaslighting people, governments.
We see it.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Although many locals believe the governments are not only aware of the UFO activity, but in on it, UFO researchers disagree, stating that whatever the aliens are doing in there is only known to the aliens themselves. And honestly, I don't blame them there.
Yeah, I mean, aliens, you do you. I know you're listening. I know you're here.
You're listening.
Do you. Don't worry about the other humans.
Ignore them. I don't blame you for not involving us. Humans fuck up everything.
Yeah.
But interesting that you would pick our planet to have a base. Maybe they have a base on every planet. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey.
Which alien race is it? Is it like LaGuardia? Like it's just a hub and people are getting their flights switched over there? So it's a bunch of different cultures? Or is it just one alien race?
Maybe what it is that each planet is actually their version of an airport.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're just the wildlife of the planet that they don't really take seriously.
So yeah, that's all I've got. I was just really surprised that there was not only alien activity, but they were no, this is where the aliens do their shit. It's cute that you think they're at Area 51. Yeah, real cute.
They don't like America that much.
Yeah, no kidding. They're probably no, definitely not even going to bother going over there.
Yeah, they're in their own little worlds. They're going through some shit. They're going through it.
So yeah, guys, we hope you enjoyed our alien episode, our India episode. My God.
Ugh. Our India episode.
I need sleep. Oh, I did. Did you ever find out the name of what your favorite cryptid is?
No. Honestly, I've just been incredibly busy. So I'm just
Yeah, I don't blame you.
But I will find it.
He'll get back to us eventually.
Round two. Oh my God. I do want to share, before we do end this, a little interaction that I had with Yvonne earlier. We have our cube shelf thing from IKEA that we have all our trinkets and books and stuff on. Mm-hmm. And on the top, I actually have my mom's ashes. And so he was packing up the collectibles that we have. And I was just leave the ashes, though. And he was I wasn't going to touch those. And I was technically they could be a collectible. It is one of two.
Oh, and
Eddie never knows how to handle me when I make those jokes.
Does he have, is he uncomfortable with death?
No, no, no. I think he just doesn't expect me to say the types of jokes that I say.
It's jarring sometimes, because you're just oh. Dark humor, okay.
I think the one time I said like a just a stupid joke, and then I bit back with, well, I mean, at least my mom has a longer shelf life than that joke did.
Oh, so uncomfortable.
And it's okay to laugh because humor makes everything better.
It's true. It's true. That's why you got to check out that Death is Hilarious podcast. So everybody, join us again next week on Sunday. Hopefully everything will be smooth and we won't be releasing any more old episodes just because we're ill and have the black lung. I don't know if you heard my intro either to last week's episode, but I could barely get through. I was like, hey, guys. Like, hey, obviously you don't want to listen to this for an hour.
Enjoy the archived content.
Yeah, well, it's a good episode, so I'm glad we had an opportunity to re-release it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, we'll catch y'all on the flippity flip.
The floppity flop. See you next week.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Murder Mystery, theme song by Luella Gren, logo by Lexi Wilson. New episodes air every Sunday on Apple, Google, Spotify, pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts. This podcast is currently entirely self-funded, so in order to keep it going, we really rely on word of mouth. So if you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, review, and of course, tell your friends. If you have questions, corrections, or location and story suggestions, you can email us at murdermysterypodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram @MurderMystery. And don't forget to join us again next week.